Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. If you have just joined us, welcome to Radio Islam International and welcome to the program Family Health Matters. I'm your host, Sister Zeenat. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. The time right now, 2:09, alhamdulillah. And coming up is health news. Today, inshallah, we want to look at just some health tips for our Hajis. To how to stay healthy during the Hajj pilgrimage. I know many of them have left, or quite a few of them have left already, and I know of many people leaving this week. You know that everybody's on their way for the most Mubarak journey of their life, alhamdulillah. But it's very, very important also to stay healthy during this time. So I'll be sharing some wonderful health tips with you, inshallah. And that'll be followed by the growing child. My guest this afternoon is Sister Fatima Dawood, our community nursing sister. And in our series of programs on common health conditions in newborns, we will be discussing two important topics today. It's lethargy and sleepiness and respiratory distress in newborns, inshallah. So that's what you can look forward to for the next hour. So let's get back to health news, and today, inshallah, we share with you some tips to stay healthy during the Hajj period. It is especially for our Hajjis, alhamdulillah. Now, the Hajj pilgrimage is undertaken by millions of Muslims every year, and of course, like we said earlier, staying healthy and strong during the physically demanding journey is crucial. Now, that, you know, there's nothing, you know, worse than being ill, especially those 5 days of Hajj, because, you know, that is the most important 5 days of your life, I would say, and you want to be as healthy as possible during that time. Now, they say the Hajj pilgrimage is undertaken by millions every year, and like we said, it is a very crucial journey in every Muslim's life. Maintaining energy and bodily strength during Hajj necessitates that certain safety precautions be taken. After all, the pilgrim would most likely not want to be consumed by thoughts of discomfort and either stay or be, you know, kept away from his or her primary focus of worship. Today I'm going to share with you some tips on how to protect yourself from the three frequent health issues that pilgrims or any person engaged in a physically demanding journey may face. And that would be infections, food poisoning, and of course heat stroke. Those are the three important ones. And then we also want to talk to you about some contagious disease, you know, some ways of prevention, inshallah, how to prevent all these, you know, these, especially if you have a chronic disease, how to prevent prevent getting sick during those important days. Even during your journey, you want to stay healthy. Even if you're going for a few weeks, you want to be healthy all the time, because this is the time that you're going to spend in the way of Allah all the time, in ibadat, so much of ibadat. And like I said earlier, the last thing you want to be is feeling sick and discomfort. And the worst is if you have to be, you know, not able to do what you have come to do or what you are going to do, inshallah. Okay, so let's look at some of these health issues. The first one is food poisoning. And they say a common symptom pilgrims are prone is diarrhea, and it's often caused by food poisoning. Food may be either undercooked or cooked properly but kept outside for hours in unsafe conditions. In either case, food is prone to bacterial growth, which can lead to diarrhea, abdominal cramps, and feeling sick. Now, one of the things that many people do is to take with pot course. Yes. You know, you have to take food with, but be careful. If it's very hot, food can go off very easily, and that can also cause diarrhea and, of course, make you sick. If something tastes wrong, you know, if perhaps you have taken chicken or something and it's still a bit red, that means it's either undercooked or if you think that the food has been kept out for more than 2 hours, The motto to remember in this case is, when in doubt, throw it out. So if you doubt anything, don't even bother putting it into your mouth. You can resort to less risky foods such as packaged cream cheese, bread, rice, potatoes, canned, unopened food, and smoked meats. And if you do get diarrhea, adjusting your diet is recommended. Then you need to avoid all fiber-containing foods such as whole grains, beans, most fruits and vegetables. And if you're lactose intolerant, stay away from dairy as well. Fatty or fried food can upset your stomach and worsen your diarrhea. So you need to be very careful. If you do end up having diarrhea, then these are some of the precautions you must take. What can you eat in this case? White bread, boiled potatoes, white pasta, boiled eggs, bananas, peeled apples, and grilled lean meats such as grilled fish or chicken breast. So these are some of the things that you can eat. But be careful, you know, just if like they say, if you're in doubt, then just don't have it. Stay without it rather. Right, the second one is infection and contagious diseases. Now, with regards, let's just look at contagious diseases first, such as typhoid, meningitis, flu, diarrhea spread widely in the season of Hajj due to a multitude of people coming from different countries from all over the world, and the lack of health awareness in some of these countries. Some of the pilgrims coming from these countries may carry the microbes that cause these diseases, thus leading to their spread epidemically. May Allah Ta'ala protect us all, of course. And the pilgrim is advised to take proper vaccines produced for these diseases, avoid eating food without washing it well, and drinking clean water and large quantities of liquids. Also, the symptoms of these diseases starts with fever, fatigue and colic, accompanied by constipation, followed by mild diarrhea and pain in the stomach, and also severe headache and vomiting may also occur. Once a pilgrim finds any of these symptoms, he should immediately consult the nearest medical center or hospital to run the necessary test and take the proper medication to avoid complications that may endanger his life. Now, you know, these are some important points that one should consider. You are going for Hajj. If you're not gone, please take note of these important, this information that I'm sharing with you today. Like they say, pilgrims are prone to infection, and a leading cause of infection, however, is the influenza virus. You know, I don't think there's a pilgrim that wouldn't get the flu there. So be careful of that. It targets, obviously, the upper respiratory tract, and it may lead to illnesses such as pneumonia. Now, that is when it becomes serious. Several measures are recommended to prevent the infection. Strict hygiene is the ultimate method of prevention during Hajj. Washing hands frequently, particularly before and after certain activities, is especially important to remove the germs and reduce the spread of illness. When should you wash your hands? Well, before and after eating food, before and after treating a wound, after using the toilet, and after blowing your nose, coughing, or sneezing. You know, we sometimes overlook these things and we think it's so minor, but these are things that you need to take care of. Keeping small bottles of sanitizers during Hajj is a good idea, because washrooms may not always be readily available. And we know, especially those 5 days, you know, when you're going for Hajj, you may not find the ideal toilet and bathrooms facilities, so keep these sanitizers readily available. Now, in all circumstances, keep your hands away from 3 key spots in your body. And what would that be? Your eyes, your nose, and your mouth. These are all easy routes that infection can reach your body. And I think this is, we see people walking around with masks. It's actually a good idea if you can invest in this mask and just keep them on. It's for your own health and for your own safety. Certain vitamins and minerals can play a role in strengthening your immunity, including the mineral zinc. Some studies have found that zinc may help fight off infection, while others have found no benefit at all. Where can you find the zinc? Well, things like nuts, pumpkin seeds, and chocolates are all practical sources of zinc that can, you know, that you can keep handy. So you can actually take all of these things with, you know, when you pack these things with you, inshallah. Although tempting, pilgrims should also avoid kissing on the cheek and hugging or shaking hands when greeting others. And this is one of the things we do very easily, you know, hugging and kissing people around, but try not to do that, because these activities are other ways you can either catch or transmit infections. And during Hajj, a pat on the back will do. So try rather do that, you know, pat the person on the back instead of, you know, those hugs. I know we want to hug everybody we see. You're happy to see each other. Give the person a, you know, a kiss on the cheek or something like that. But try and avoid that. Heat-related illnesses, you need to drink enough fluids, coupled with pacing yourself during the pilgrimage, helping maintain adequate hydration. Water is always the best form of fluid, and you should drink it abundantly. And also, you know, you are in the Holy Land, so try and drink as much Zamzam water as you possibly can, alhamdulillah. Both hot weather and physical activity increases your needs for water, so ideally, you should be aiming for about 8 to 10 glasses of water per day. One thing I was always advised, and I always advise listeners, it was advice given to me when we went for Hajj, and that I always give to others, is to try and avoid drinking cool drinks. Try and avoid drinking very cold drinks as well. Even water shouldn't be drunk very, very cold. You know, this also, sometimes it catches your throat and you start getting throat infections, and before you know it, you end up with the flu and you're not well. Then, sunstrokes are also very common, so it is necessary to avoid direct sunlight for long hours. If you experience symptoms of chills, headache, dizziness, and nausea, move away to a cooler area and seek medical help. Remember, don't overexert yourself. Pace your walking and rest in the shade when needed. So these are some of the important, you know, illnesses that you should be aware of. Now, also, some necessary health recommendations, or rather recommendations for relevant to some diseases. These are the chronic ones, like heart patients, kidney patients, diabetics, asthmatics, hypertension patients. Now, for heart patients, people who suffer from narrowness in the coronary arteries, which supply blood to the heart muscle, should take their medication regularly and avoid exhausting and stressing themselves. So if you know you are a heart patient, you know, just be careful. Don't overexhaust yourself and stop stressing. You know, you should just be very calm. They should carry their prescription pills for expanding the arteries with them, which are placed under the tongue when they experience chest pain. And they should also take full rest. If the pain becomes severe, they should consult the nearest medical center to receive the necessary treatment. Sometimes they may need to be transferred to specialized hospitals in order to complete the required test and undergo intensive treatment. So, you know, to prevent all of that, I think the best thing is to just make sure that you take your medication that you need to take and not to overexhaust yourself and also stress yourself out. Kidney patients, people who suffer from chronic kidney infections are advised to drink large amounts of liquids and also avoid prolonged exposure to the sun. And this is because when the body loses liquids through perspiration, this may lead to deficiency in kidney function. So, yeah, there's also a warning for kidney patients. Then for diabetics, and I know many, many people are diabetics. Diabetics who use insulin should keep their insulin shots in a cool place so that they do not lose their effectiveness. They should also take their injections on time and have their meals on a regular basis to avoid a drop in their blood sugar level that may endanger their lives. So, you know, you need to take these precautions. Diabetics is recommended that they carry small sugar pills to take upon experiencing symptoms of shortage of sugar, such as feelings of hunger or perspiration accompanied by heartbeats. It is important that they consult the nearest medical center to have necessary modifications to their insulin dose after testing the level of blood sugar. So if you know you are diabetic, then make sure you take all your medication with you and, you know, keep a check on your health all the time. And then asthma patients, well, people who suffer bronchial asthma have to receive their medication regularly, whether pills or inhalers. They should always carry along their inhalers that widen their bronchial tubes and use them when they find difficulty in breathing or chest wheezing. They should also rest and avoid crowds. I don't know how you're going to do that as much as possible, because, I mean, during the time of Hajj, it is crowded, so, you know, you need to be careful, lest they suffer asthma, in which case they should consult the nearest hospital or to receive intensive treatment in the form of oxygen taken via inhalers or injections. They may need to take antibiotics in case of chest inflammation. And a person who suffers from these disorders must drink large amounts of liquids and avoid prolonged exposure to the sun. So, you know, this is something that, for just about everything, you need to drink lots of water. So hydration plays a very, very important role in your health during the Hajj period. And, of course, try and stay out of the sun. I know it's very hot, but just when you are there, you know, try and just limit the time that you spend in the sun. And then, of course, the last one is hypertension patients. Patients who suffer from hypertension should bring along a sufficient quantity of their medication and take them on time. Please, we must not become neglectful of our medication. They should lessen the amount of salt in their food. It is recommended that they visit one of the medical centers to measure their blood pressure from time to time to make sure that it is within the normal range. And finally, we wish all our pilgrims a successful and an accepted Hajj, as well as a healthy and a safe return home, inshallah. So we implore Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to remove all afflictions and diseases from us and from all Muslims, inshallah. And we wish all our Hajjis out there a safe and a healthy trip, inshallah. And please, please, you know, I cannot stress enough how important it is for us to stay healthy during this time. You know, I mean, you will get sick, but make sure you take all your medication with you, and if you need to see your doctor or the doctors on call, every place wherever you are, whichever group you are, have their medical doctors with them. So make sure you just keep a health on your own. And, I mean, your health is so important during this time. So make sure that you take care of it and take all the necessary precautions, inshallah. Well, that's it for health news today. When we return, inshallah, it's the growing child. My guest is Sister Fatima Dawood, our community nursing sister. And today we talk about common health conditions in newborns. And we're going to be talking about two specific conditions, lethargy and sleepiness and respiratory distress in newborn babies. Stay tuned. We'll be back in a few moments. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome back to the program. It's the growing child. And this afternoon, my guest is Sister Fatima Dawood, our community nursing sister. Now, this is our series of programs on common conditions in newborns. Today, inshallah, we're discussing lethargy and sleepiness, and inshallah, also a little bit on respiratory distress in newborns. Now, a newborn baby needs a lot of sleep, and unless he's hungry or cold or uncomfortable, he's likely to spend at least, they say, 60% of his time asleep. Mm. Alhamdulillah. And, you know, it is normal for newborns to sleep most. Is it really normal, Sister Fatima, for newborns to sleep most of the day? Sometimes, you know, especially if it's your first baby and it's the first time you are handling babies and you, as a new mother, this baby is just sleeping most of the time, you do become concerned. But like I said, is it normal for newborns to sleep most of the day?
It's quite normal for babies to sleep most of the time. I think they sleep 23 hours out of 24. They've been in a very quiet, serene place for the 9 months, and when they are born, they come out like that. They sleep most of the time.
But you didn't also find some babies that don't sleep, you know, the moment they just really, really cry. You know, especially newborn babies, and you sometimes wonder, what is the problem?
Now, I must remember something. They were in a very secluded, warm environment. No movements, no screaming, no shouting, no weather, no cold, no hot. They were in a serene, comfortable place. And suddenly, they come out, and you must remember something. Labor isn't very easy.
Mm-hmm.
Like you see here, you talk about lethargy and sleepiness. Labor can cause it, because it depends on how long the labor is and how difficult the labor is. But with a normal labor, babies, remember, have been sleeping for all that time, and suddenly they are born into this wide world and they feel the cold. And as soon as that, you know, is in contact with the skin, the hands, the touching, the coldness, the weather, they start crying. And crying is the first reaction of a baby, of a normal, healthy baby. They cry, and what the crying does, of course, it expands the lungs, it expands the chest, it expands, you know, the entrance of oxygen, which the body needs for health.
So basically what you're saying, it's not only the mother that goes through labor, it's also the baby that goes through the process of labor, and it's exhausting for the baby too.
Baby goes through a lot of trauma during delivery, and that's why you have to be so careful. And these are the things that do affect the baby. The health-wise, physically-wise, breathing-wise, it does affect them. If it's a very long labor, you can actually see the strain on the baby.
So baby really is tired. That's why they really do
very
sleep
tired,
like that.
Yeah.
Alhamdulillah. Okay, so it's normal for babies to actually sleep most of the time, and it's not something that one should be concerned about, really.
You should be concerned.
Yeah,
now it doesn't sleep all the time. Look, now it's out of its very comfortable environment. So they are going to feel two things: the heat, the atmosphere, and of course hunger, because they do suck the liquid in the womb. They do swallow it. So they are eating inside, so they're used to that. And what they do when they are born, they expect that.
And
because with black babies are born, they are born with a sucking reflex.
So baby should then at least wake up after a few hours, every now and again, a baby should be waking up.
And then normally it's 3 to 4 hourly.
Okay, so basically they'll get up because they are hungry. Or they're a bit uncomfortable, and they should be getting up every few hours. But now when does it become a concern, you know, when you notice the baby really is not waking up so, you know, as often as or at least every few hours? What would make it a concern?
The first concern is when a baby is born, it's a length of the labor. You must take that into consideration. That's why we do, you know, the baby must have its normal length of labor. It mustn't be too long. And when baby is born, you must know they've been through stress. When they're coming through the birth canal, and it causes problems. It does cause a bit of pressure on the brain, causes pressure on the child. When that happens is, as soon as they are born, they now are in the independent. And what happens here is the child comes in contact with the air. So the first thing they do, it's like a shock coming into the world. And the next best thing they do, they have to survive. How do you survive? It's breathing. So the first thing they have to do is breathe. So, and when baby is born, you will see what they do is they clear the air passages, they clear the mouth, they clear the nose for the air to enter the lungs. And if the concern is, if the baby takes a bit long to breathe, then you have, there's a concern, you must get it breathing fast. And the other thing is, if the baby's color, the skin is too good. Must be, as soon as it breathes, it becomes pink. If that doesn't happen, the tinge of blue candy on the skin, that is a concern. The concern there could be that some complication or something to do with the baby's health.
Mm-hmm. if a baby doesn't get up on its own for its feeding, or too tired or uninterested to eat or some things like that,
it's a concern. It's definitely a concern. It takes about 3 to 4 hours to digest.
Mm-hmm.
So as soon as the baby's tummy is empty, it needs to be filled again. So they wake up automatically 3 to 4 hours. And it's a pattern that the regular pattern that they adopt. So by 3 to 4 hours you see the child getting up. What it needs to be done is that it needs to be fed and it needs to be dried. Because remember, the bowels work throughout sleep or when the baby's awake. The bowel will work the bladder. So if the baby's uncomfortable there, it needs to be changed, and if the baby's hungry, it needs to be fed.
Lethargy, especially if it's a sudden change in baby's usual pattern, may be a symptom of serious illnesses. What kind of illnesses are we talking about?
Lethargy is a concern, because when baby is born, there's tremendous pressure on the head. So when the baby passes through the birth canal, it accommodates the size of the head of the baby does. But if there's pressure on the baby's head, if there's a delayed labor, or if the mother's pelvis is too small, and if the baby is born through that passage, the brain can be affected, and this can cause lethargy, where the baby is much more dull than the normal baby would be that's born normal. And if that happens, it's a concern, because then it has to be checked up. To check if the brain is working, is the brain functioning, is the lungs functioning, is the baby's body functioning. So these are the things that we have to watch for.
Mm-hmm.
And you know that when, as soon as baby is born, what they do is you put the baby onto a surface where it's comfortable, clean the nose out, clean the eyes, clean the mouth so the child can start breathing, then you check your baby. See if everything is there, the feet, the hands, the legs, the genitals, the tummy, the eyes, the nose, all that has to be checked.
Mm-hmm. So that's when a pediatrician normally does that, isn't it?
Does it.
Okay. Now, also, when baby starts getting jaundice, one of the symptoms of the jaundice is also the lethargy, isn't that so? That the baby becomes very lethargic.
There's two types of jaundice. The one is the jaundice after a couple of days, which is not a big concern. But if the baby is born with jaundice, means there's a disturbance of the bilirubin in the body, that is a concern. So the baby has to be treated immediately.
Mm-hmm.
Baby should not be born with jaundice.
Mm-hmm. Because I know what they normally would ask you is,
when did the jaundice come?
Mm-hmm.
And the lethargy of the baby.
Yeah, and whether the baby is sucking, can you notice that the baby is not sucking well? So those are then some of the serious consequences of baby being lethargic.
Yeah.
Okay.
And if baby is born... If a baby is born with jaundice and is lethargic, of course, treatment has to be started immediately.
Mm-hmm. Now, we also spoke about blockage of the nasal passages. Now, that sometimes is obviously, now we're going to be talking a little about respiratory distress in the baby. How long after birth does the baby start breathing normally?
Immediately after birth. It must breathe immediately after birth. As soon as some babies, as soon as the head is born, not even the body, they start crying already. So this is the first normal development of a child, is when they're born, when they cry as soon as they are born. Because they need to do that, because oxygen has to be absorbed into the body.
But the pattern, is there, the after birth, does the breathing kind of form a pattern? The normal breathing pattern. Does a baby either breathe a bit too fast or a bit slow, and then suddenly, get that normal pattern of breathing?
Yeah. Look, the baby is very small still. They have to be accustomed to their surroundings. They have to get accustomed to the body heat. They get accustomed to where they are, the environment. So what happens here is they take a bit of time, but breathing is immediately. and if they do, there's no problem with breathing too late. You have to breathe immediately. Mm. As soon as the baby is born, you have to breathe. Even in a cesarean section. You must remember, with the baby coming through the birth canal, they're already preparing themselves for the breathing, for the movements, for the atmosphere, for the oxygen absorption. Because what they do as they come out, they actually help themselves to come through. And when they are born, they are ready for the external environment.
Mm-hmm.
So they breathe fast, they cry, they move around, they, you know, by moving around, it's exercise. You must remember the muscles must now strengthen, because the baby is now independent, because he has to move itself, they have to breathe themselves, they have to eat themselves. With the cesarean section, it may just be slightly delayed, because babies are not prepared to come out at that time. You know, it's a fast cut, remove the baby, because of the mother, with the dangers of the mother's health. And when this happens, sometimes it takes just about a few minutes more to get them breathing, because now you have to clean the baby out, open the passages, clean out the mucus, and then the baby breathes.
Mm. What
and that should not cause complications.
Okay, so what can go wrong if a baby doesn't breathe, you know, immediately after the baby is born?
Babies have to breathe immediately after they are born.
That means oxygen has to be taken in.
Has to be taken in. And remember, oxygen is the food of the brain. It's brain food. So babies must breathe immediately.
That means,
and that's why with cesarean sections is, with the delivery is, they bring the baby out, clean the baby, and they're concerned about the mother. Then you work with the mother. But with the cesarean section, the concern is the baby. The first thing the doctor will do is deliver the baby, clean the baby up, get it breathing, and now they go to the mother to see that the placenta is born, that the mother is fine. You know, you are watching her, but the baby's concern is more important with the cesarean section.
So that means lack of oxygen could affect the brain.
Definitely affect the brain. And it can cause lethargy, and it can cause brain damage. The dangerous one is it can cause brain damage.
Now, sometimes babies breathe unusually, you know, not very normal. Well, according to some of the information that I have here. But what could be the cause of babies not breathing normally?
Breathing is not normally, could be an infection, like pneumonia, colds.
Can a baby
lung
have
infection?
It so quickly?
Yes,
or I mean, even unusually means even after the baby is born.
That's why there's been a very warm environment. You see the delivery rooms are very, very warm. And the temperature is conducive to the baby's health, and it is the temperature of where the baby was in the womb. That's the same temperature they try and keep it at, so that the baby gets, you know, slowly used to the environment. That's not like a shock where it comes into a very cold place. And you notice that with the babies that are born not in hospitals or not in the very conducive environment, the first thing they do is they put them into oxygen tins, because of this getting the child, you know, get them used to now the normal.
Okay, we're going to take a short break. When we return, inshallah, we continue talking about respiratory distress in newborn babies. If you do have any questions, unfortunately, we can't take any messages today or WhatsApp messages for that matter. If you would like to, then you can call in. The number to dial is 011-854-1548. And ask any of your questions, please. Do stay tuned. We'll be back in a few moments. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome back to The Growing Child. I'm your host, Sister Zeenat. My guest is Sister Fatima Dawood, our community nursing sister. We're talking about lethargy and sleepiness and also respiratory distress in newborn babies. Now, we spoke a little about lethargy and sleepiness and why it actually happens in little babies and how to actually deal with it. But with regards to respiratory distress, now we're talking about that now. And, you know, sometimes baby breathes in an unusual method as a result of, like we spoke earlier, blockage of nasal the passage. Now, what actually causes this blockage of the nasal passages, and what is the best method of treating it?
Babies normally breathe faster, they double the amount of the adult. Because they are too tiny, they can't breathe like we do, take a deep breath. They have very shallow breathing. Now with the shallow breathing, you must know that the lung actually takes longer to absorb, because there's the passage, you know, when you breathe deep, it goes into the lung. This is shallow breathing. So it is a very fast, shallow breathing, which is quite normal.
Yeah.
So when the baby breathes like that, it's normal. But if the passage is blocked, it could be the mucus. While they're coming through the passage, it could be that mucus has entered. What you do is, you take cotton wool, wet it. We wet the cotton wool so that the particles don't, you know, they don't.
It's all the time. It doesn't come off.
Doesn't come off. And when the particles are you know, when it's released into the watch, it can block the nose, because the particles with the mucus can actually form a blob and block the breathing. So you wet the cotton wool and roll it. Cotton wool and the wetting it is, and please do not use cotton wool buds. Cotton wool buds, you can actually cause damage to the baby's nose, because their noses are very, very tiny and it's very vascular. A lot of blood vessels in there. And if you do it, rupture a blood vessel, the child can choke, because the bleeding will go to the back of the throat and the child wouldn't be able to, you know, release the blood, because they don't know how to use the cough method or the cleaning throat method.
Mm-hmm.
So that you must be careful of. And the other thing is, with this cotton wool bud, the particles are released from it and it can block the passage even more. So you just use plain cotton wool, you know how we roll it in your finger, with a little bit, if you want, a little Vaseline, which makes it easier to roll into the nose, and you clear the passage like that.
Okay, and when would you use the saline nasal drops? Because that I see is also very commonly used.
But personally, I wouldn't use saline drops in tiny babies. I would use saline drops in the baby after 3 months. Because a 3-month baby can, you know, throw it out. Tiny babies can't do that. Or what we do is we actually suck it in. We can do that. But tiny babies, you must remember, they're not developed enough to use these type of methods. So use cotton wool. You must do for the baby, because the baby can't do for themselves.
So the best thing would be just a little bit of cotton wool, and then you clear up the nose with a little bit of
Vaseline. And what happens, you just roll it into the, and what cotton wool does, if it is like that, it actually goes quite far back to clear the passage completely. Instead of, you know, it doesn't block the passage.
Now, you know, they've also got this thing called the bulb syringe, where they actually can syringe the...
I know there's these syringes, but I personally wouldn't use those things, not on a very tiny baby, because that actually causes pressure, because it actually sucks. And baby's nose is very, very delicate. Like I said, it's very porous, it's very vascular. And if you rupture one of the vessels inside, the child can choke, because it can't. You must remember, they're not fully developed yet. But when we bleed, the blood clots. With babies, they're not fully developed yet. They're still developing now, so the blood may not be that vascular, that, you know, formed for it to clot immediately. And if the baby has to inhale it, it's going to go into the lungs and cause a problem there.
Mm-hmm.
It can cause an infection, and this is where pneumonia comes in, because foreign body in the lungs.
Yeah, and I think also by using that thing, it's you know, it irritates the baby, so you can actually hurt the little one.
You can,
because anything you push into the nose, obviously they're going to be pulling out, they're trying to pull their head, you know, pull the face away or head away or the little nose away for that matter, and you may hurt the baby.
You must notice the bud. You push it into the baby's ear also, they pull away because you're hurting. Even the nose, the passage is very, very small inside, and you do hurt the baby. And we don't think that these are now, it's adults. It's things that adults use for their noses and for cleaning out. It's not for tiny babies.
Okay.
So cotton wool is very soft, and when you wet it, it's even softer. Okay. And it doesn't leave particles behind. This is the important thing. It mustn't leave particles behind.
Okay. So the saline drops are for bigger babies?
I would say bigger children, because a child can't snuff.
Mm.
You know, and if you say a drop, how big is a drop? How big is my drop to your drop?
Mm.
You understand?
Well, they probably use it to drop it.
No, but then how forceful are we pressing it? So when you press, my press and your press to different ones. So I may be lenient, you know, more gentle, and the others may just press and 2, 3, 4 drops go in. Baby can't absorb that. They can choke with it.
But doesn't this cause the baby to sneeze?
It doesn't
have to sneeze. Too small.
They're too sneeze. They're much too small. They're much too small to do this. They're just born.
Mm-hmm.
They are just born, and it's for us to do for them, not they do for themselves. They can't do that.
Okay. Now, also, just to end our program, you know, what warning signs can one actually look out for, and when, you know, for us to actually go and see or have the baby taken to a pediatrician or to a doctor immediately, you know, where respiratory distress is concerned?
Any distress, you see your baby is very uncomfortable. And normally, with the newborn, they are very comfortable. Remember, they come from a very comfortable zone, and they're made very comfortable outside, because what they do, they have a nice hot bath, and they are wrapped tight and in the mother's arms. And that alone, it's a transferred attention, because inside they were with the mother as well, and here they were the mother again, because they can hear the mother's heartbeat as well, because the mother's holding the baby, so it's transferred. Understand? But if they're alone like that, it's uncomfortable. And we must remember is what we must make the baby comfortable. They must be warm at all times. Don't overheat. You don't overheat. Put a lot of blankets on. But a wrapper and a blanket is fine. Right? When you see the baby, they have a very rapid, shallow breathing. Normal. The color is pink. Their mouth is pink. The nose is pink. If the respiration becomes a bit labored or not that shallow anymore, there's something wrong. If the baby's skin is not the pink color, turning blue, that's also a problem that you must check for. And rapid breathing is one that you must check for as well, for pneumonia.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, temperature. The baby's temperatures are 97 above little, but if you feel that they are more hot than usual. And when we feel the baby's temperatures under the arms, between the legs, you can feel the heat, then it's a concern.
So it's important for you as a new mom to always have a little thermometer with you to be able to measure the temperature immediately. The temperature goes out, then obviously there's some kind of infection that one needs to be concerned about.
There's something wrong with the baby. Mm. Yeah.
Now, they also talk about sometimes baby have that like a grunting or something while breathing. What is that all about?
Oh, grunting shouldn't be there at all.
So you shouldn't wait until you hear a thing like that.
The grunting doesn't even come into a baby's life, really, because when they start grunting, they are very sick.
Okay. Also,
and the grunting is pneumonia, because they can't breathe. They start grunting breathing.
Okay. And then what about... you know, sometimes when they breathe, can you see? You see the
fibrillation. Yes, yeah. You shouldn't see that.
That shouldn't.
There, yeah. When you see a fibrillation, then you know that the difficulty in breathing. The baby's having difficulty in breathing.
So you shouldn't even wait for these things to come up.
No, you don't.
The minute you feel temperature and fast breathing or something like
restless,
that, and you, yeah, baby's
a restless
resting,
baby. Yeah.
You
if
should.
You see a restless baby, slight cough, breathing, not normal. A color not normal, temperature not normal, can have them checked up.
Mm.
And you don't wait. I always say you don't wait for the father to come home to take baby to hospital. Or children as well. When they
and don't wait for the night.
You don't wait for the night. You go immediately. As soon as baby is not well, you go.
Mm. I know it may be sometimes difficult, but I think the best thing to do is to try and arrange for some kind of transport or call your doctor. If you are so concerned and you know you can't get to a doctor immediately, at least call and make sure that, can I wait until this time to come, or should I bring the baby in immediately?
And if you phone your doctor, of course, you tell the doctor what is happening to your child. Not my child is sick, I'm not happy about it. My child is grunting, my child color is blue, he's labored breathing, the temperature is not right, please, I've got to, I'm concerned. That's all.
Well, listeners, that's all we have for you today. Inshallah, we will be back in a month's time, hopefully, when she with you some other information with regards to your baby. I hope this information that we've shared with you will be of benefit to you, inshallah. And yes, all we can say is take care of your baby and don't be neglectful of the health in any way, inshallah. Well, Jazakallah khair, Sister Fatima, for a very informative program once again. And if anybody is interested, they can contact Sister Fatima. I mean, if you do have a concern, then contact her on the number 011-852-6515. And inshallah, she will be able to advise you correctly. Well, listeners, that's it then from us. Until next time, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.